Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, American Family Radio. And we thank you for listening all across the country. I'm Tim Wildman. I'll be with you for the next hour and 25 minutes. Joining me is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And on Wednesdays, Abraham Hamilton III, a.k.a. Abe.
Good morning.
Joins us. Good morning, Abe. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
That would wear me out if I had to call you Abraham Hamilton III every time I addressed you.
I appreciate you saying Abe's okay. What if you had to say it twice in every sentence?
Wow.
At the beginning and the end.
You make your children do that?
Oh. No.
Okay.
They just say daddy. They just say daddy. That's it.
Oh, man. Anyway, thanks for joining us on the program today, everybody. A lot to talk about. Ed, why don't you give us a preview?
Well,
and make it sound interesting. I want it gripping, Ed. I want it compelling.
Wow.
Radio.
So you went from making it interesting to making it gripping.
Yeah,
and compelling.
Yeah, I want to be on interesting. I want to know why people should leave it on their
You've raised
on
the bar.
AFR for the next hour.
Well, I'll tell you what. Our first guest in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking about being a Christian in a post-Christian world. Is America post-Christian? If it is, how do we live as Christians in that kind of world? That right there is compelling.
That's compelling radio.
Bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Todd Starnes. He says that a police officer told him, the Red Cross told him, he wasn't allowed to pray with flood victims down in Baton Rouge. So is that true? How could that happen in America?
Right.
Todd Starnes will bring this to our attention. The next hour, we're going to have Maisie Pyburn on from American Family Studios. We have a Christian cinema website up and running.
What is Christian cinema?
Well, Maisie Pyburn is going to tell us. There's movies available to our people.
In one place.
And I'm telling you, that's going to be gripping right there. So, how's that?
That's not believable. But anyway.
Gripping Christian cinema.
Yeah, okay.
Compelling.
All right. Hey, you know, last night, Abe, you weren't on with us yesterday, but I made fun of Hillary Clinton coughing.
Oh.
I did. It was probably wasn't the professional radio, but it just came
naturally.
But
it was compelling.
I said, here's what I'm going to apologize for, and I mean this. I said, Hillary Clinton. I said, and see what I'm saying? Abe's turning away like that was embarrassing. Like you shouldn't have done that. I felt bad about that last night for a little bit.
Well,
I don't really feel bad about much I talk about Hillary Clinton, but for that I felt like, you know, probably shouldn't have done that.
Well,
awesome.
I did a mock.
So I want to apologize for people that was unprofessional to do that. But the story is big news. That is the fact that she's coughing habitually at a lot of these places she's going now, and people are wondering, is she sick? And Ed, you said something about that yesterday. You said could be a reaction to medicine.
Could be a reaction to medicine. She may be just speaking so much because she's campaigning,
right,
and has been for a long
her
time.
Her voice is shot.
Her vocal cords are,
right,
are, you know.
But why wouldn't you just say that, though? If you have, like, an allergic reaction to medicine, if you see this big news story blowing up everywhere, I've just been speaking a whole lot, and I'm allergic to gluten or whatever, or I'm allergic to whatever medicine I've been taking.
To me, she could say that anyway, even if it wasn't true. You know, I mean, what,
she's
see,
good at that.
See what I'm saying? I mean,
she's very good at that.
If I think her handlers are probably
that was
saying
worse
just,
than what I did right there. What Abe?
Oh no,
did.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What Abe did yesterday, just inside the office,
right,
is way worse.
Well, we
than
can't
what you
even
did.
Talk about that.
Well, I think they aired it on.
Oh, did they air it?
On Brian's show.
Okay. Well, so I don't think Abe is anyone to complain about what you did yesterday.
I don't know what
he did was
about.
Far worse.
Okay. I don't even want to know.
I'm saying I think that Hillary Clinton's handlers, her team is probably saying, look, just ignore it. If you ignore it, it's going to sound petty. And then what you can do is you can suck Donald. This is what I would do. you suck Donald Trump in so to where he's talking about that at every campaign, and then you do an interview and you say, I'm allergic to gluten. And so, you know, it makes me cough. And this is the kind of man you want to put in as president?
Are you setting him up? You think
you set him up.
You set him up.
You may be waiting to do that, maybe.
Yeah.
You think this is a setup, Abe? A gluten setup?
I don't know if it's a gluten setup, because if you look at some of these coughing spells, that they're pretty bad. And I think that this could give an indication. I don't know affirmatively, but it could give an indication as to what happened when she had that like 10 or 15 minute absence from the debate stage during the Democratic primary, where she was just gone and the television networks were getting nervous. Like, where did she go? We don't know. And Bernie Sanders was like, I guess we have to pause the debate. Yeah. We can't go forward.
Well, and like Tim said, now, Tim, you did make a valid point yesterday in the midst of that fit of Hillary mockery.
Right.
If she does that in the middle of a debate where she has a 4 or 5 minute coughing spell, even though most people will say, oh, the poor thing, I think in some people's minds they could say, I'm not sure she can last 4 years. So it becomes a perception issue for her. But barring that, I think if Trump continues to ask for her medical records, when she does release them, I say she sets the hook. And she says, see, this guy's been, look, my medical records show I'm in perfect health. I do have a problem if I speak a lot, which I do. I have this problem. I sometimes when I would preach a lot, I would have to have cough drops because I would start to cough. I would just make it look like he's a conspiracy nut. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I would do.
And add that to the birther deal. And
right.
You might have a
winning
sandwich.
See, this guy's not, he doesn't have the temperament to be in an office because he sees things that aren't there. So I think the Trump campaign ought to be careful, and if I was the Hillary Clinton campaign, unless there's something seriously wrong with her that she wants to hide, I'd reel them in. I'd reel them in and set the hook and then make a big point about it.
You think Donald Trump is susceptible to to being baited? Is that what you're saying?
No way, especially after midnight with Twitter.
With his Twitter account.
No way.
He is susceptible, and he's going to continue to ask for her medical records.
He's been taking some medicine or something for about 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
He's calm.
To calm down.
I think Benadryl.
Huh?
I think he's been taking some Benadryl or something.
Well, whatever works. Whatever works. He's been doing well to stay on message. And I think his numbers have gone up. Because he hasn't gone on a what would you call it, a unscripted
rant or something
in a while, which he's prone to do. I think he's been more disciplined. And then she's had all these, troubles with her, in the news all the time.
Right.
She likes MC Hammer.
She does like MC Hammer.
The latest story with them taking hammers to Blackberries and iPads.
Oh, what is that? Yes. Was that true? Or is that
yes, it's true.
What happened?
It is true.
The FBI documents that were recovered as a result of their investigation, what makes James Comey look even worse, shows that she used over 13 different Blackberries and 5 different iPads during her time as the Secretary of State. And her aides literally took hammers to destroy them.
So nothing could be taken off.
So nothing could be. I mean,
is that true?
It's
you're serious.
True.
That's true.
Sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit.
It does. This is true. This was a Trump spokesperson or representative was on the CNN Brooke Baldwin show.
Right.
And raised this amongst a cadre of issues. And Brooke Baldwin attempted to immediately kind of play gotcha with him. Say, wait a minute. Let's fact check that on the fly. Got their fact check guy to say, wait a minute, he's saying that there's evidence that Hillary Clinton's aides took hammers to Blackberries and iPads. Is that true? And the CNN fact checker says it's true.
Yeah, they popped up another window. He looked sheepish.
And
he
so
looked embarrassed to be saying it, but he said, well, that is true. And she was stone-faced.
Stone-faced.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then she says, oh, so it is true.
Right. So you take a hammer. Now, I'm just as a puny little person, a single citizen in the United States.
Small, Ed, but
well, an insignificant, maybe not physically small, an insignificant person. if the IRS comes to me and says, you know, we're going to audit you, and I say, well, I could, you know, I had a BlackBerry and I had an iPad, and the information you're looking for was on there, but I had one, you know, one of my kids took a hammer to it and broke it. I don't think that's going to fly. You know, if they say you had someone break the instrument that has your records that we're looking for, that looks to me like a cover-up.
After you know we're looking for them?
After you know we're looking. Yes, even worse.
Only you after know, you know we're looking for them.
But I'm just a insignificant person here. I'm not part of the Clinton machine.
That wouldn't even fly with a college professor. Where's your assignment, Abe? Well, you know, my cousin broke my iPad with a hammer.
Yeah.
Right. You know what? Of course, the dishonesty number for among the American people for her, that's not the way to properly say that. Her rating, in other words, most people think she's dishonest.
We have an English professor who's our next guest. She's listening. So
okay, be
we
careful.
So we want to make sure we use more betterer language than that.
Well, I ain't going to mess this one up, Ben. All right, so what I'm trying to say is that what I'm trying to say is she has a credibility and a honesty problem with the 60-plus percent of the American
close
people.
Close to 70%.
Is it close to 70?
Wasn't it in the high 60s?
You know what you got going on here, though? And we all know this. It's just,
corrupt versus crazy.
Here comes Captain Obvious. Okay, I'm going to impersonate Captain Obvious. This whole thing, her whole thing with the email, putting her server in the bathroom, trying to withhold information, destroying things.
Deleting emails,
not turning everything over, telling people you're doing one thing while you know it's not true. This has been going on for a couple years, some would argue. No, a couple decades.
Right.
But certainly with all this stuff about her emails, and it's not insignificant, and the FBI said so. They didn't choose to indict her. Why they didn't, I think, is a mystery to people, unless you just say, well, Tim, she's powerful, and powerful people can get away with things, even with the FBI.
Well, the perception in this race, my opinion, is it's corrupt versus crazy. I think that's the perception of people. Trump is out there. He's
that's
whacked
what,
out.
That's a perception.
That's the public perception. He's out there. I'm not sure he's got the temperament to be president. Hillary Clinton, we all know, is corrupt. And so you've got corrupt versus crazy. The first candidate to be able to change that perception, or at least say the good that you're getting by voting for me outweighs my obvious flaws, that's your
next
president.
I think the potential upside is with him on that, because I think the longer he goes, I'm not denying what you're saying is true, the public perception that he's off the wall,
right?
Quote crazy. I think if he has the possibility to ramp that down,
right?
If you can ramp down, you know what I'm saying, and change those numbers. Maybe not a lot, maybe, but enough maybe to win some of these swing states. For her, she's dishonest and corrupt, according to you said, nearly 70% of the American people.
I think it was close to 69%.
And they know that, and that's baked in to their decision. So I don't think she can change that. She's not going to become, Mother Teresa between now and November. Everybody just says, oh, it's just, it's Hillary Clinton, and this is what you get. You get lies and obfuscation and, and destroyed BlackBerries and all kinds of stuff like the shady stuff. So you just say that's what you're going to get with her. But it's better than, people would say, what you're saying, Ed, that is a person that's not ready to lead.
68%, according to a CNN
poll. Stunning.
Say Clinton isn't honest and trustworthy.
To your point, Tim, do you think, and I know we have a guest coming on, do you think what we're seeing with Trump's moderation of his tone and adjustment in his approach, do you think that could be a demonstration, a Trump-style demonstration of some sort of humility being displayed, whereas he shakes up his campaign, gets new people working, and now You have a little bit different messaging, a little bit different tone. Could it be that he's taking the advice of those who are gathered around him?
It appears to me so. It appears to me so. The man cannot be, he hasn't been as successful in his life and in evidently with his children. If you're just completely nuts, you just, that's just not possible. But now, so I think he has finally taken some of the people around him's advice to, all right, let's talk to people reasonably here. Let's don't just shout, call people names. Maybe there's a place for some of that in politics, but you need to tell people where you stand on the issues A, B, C, D, and E, and do things that way. Going to Mexico really helped him, I think, meeting there with the Mexican president, but yet coming home and saying, you know, we're still going to national security and border control is still one of my top priorities. I think he's been doing well the last couple of weeks, and I think the potential for him to is great, where I don't think she's going to be able to, and it hasn't hurt her. Well, it has hurt her, but it hasn't hurt her fatally. I'm talking about her dishonesty numbers. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues, and what Ed's saying about her, where are you getting that number, 70%?
A CNN poll. 68% was a CNN poll.
Clinton News Network?
Says
our boss is not.
This is after the Democratic National Convention. After the convention.
Yeah. See, the way they did Bernie Sanders with the rigged DNC. And that's just the Clinton, what do you call it, modus operandi.
Yeah. So, and then hires Debbie Wasserman Schultz right after. I mean,
it's one thing after another where you forget about them.
Yeah.
You forget about them. Anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We will see what happens. The first debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is September the 26th.
It's a Monday night.
And it's a Monday night, up against Monday Night Football.
Right.
That Lester Holt moderating.
I would have made it Tuesday night in pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I think our country could have made a killing.
Could have had an undercard debate.
Yes.
This goes toward the national debt.
Yeah. You want to welcome our guest?
Absolutely. We want to welcome Leslie Williams, who's a novelist, prize-winning poet, English professor, and visiting scholar from Yale Divinity School. I'd like to just borrow that bio. She's author of the book, When Anything Goes, Being a Christian in a Post-Christian World. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you
for having me.
Well, did you hear our earlier conversations? We were concerned. We knew you were listening in. You're an English professor. We were just concerned about our grammar. Do you do that? Are you a kind of a grammar Nazi at parties and
no,
stuff?
No, I'm not a grammar Nazi.
Okay, good. Well, listen.
I enjoyed hearing the conversation. Yes, I think that when anything goes, anything can go in November, and probably will.
And probably will. Well, let me just ask you this. This, you know, we've heard terms like postmodern and post-Christian being tossed around for at least a decade, maybe since the 90s. I don't know how far back postmodern goes, but what do you mean by a post-Christian world? I mean, it seems like I think you're even married to a minister, aren't you? I mean, people are going to church, so how are we post-Christian?
People are. Well, as far as these classifications go, it has to do with the fact that in the Middle Ages, the world was Christian. The Western world was Christian. At every level of life, it was Christian. And then the pilgrims, to get away from the kind of religion that they wanted to escape, you know, the Puritans, came to America, and we established this country on the separation of church and state. So therefore, our society is secular. You see what I mean? It's not post-Christian in the sense that, oh goodness, there are plenty of people of faith, thank the Lord, still. But from the government down, it's not, quote, Christian.
Okay, so just for our listeners, just kind of unpack that a little bit. I mean, because you have George Washington in his farewell address saying that that without morality and religion, those are two indispensable supports for political prosperity. Absolutely. So how do you kind of tease that out, that the government isn't controlled, isn't wed to a particular church, yet the church is to have an influence on society?
Well, yes, and it still does. Of course, we've, you know, got it on our money. God we trust. But it is not a sweeping thing that enters every household. You get to choose. And this is the upside of this, is that everybody gets to choose. You get to choose which church you go to.
Right.
And people, of course, you know, the main message of my book is God is on his throne and Jesus loves you. And we live in a place that you get to choose. You can play soccer on Sunday morning, or you can go to church, and you can go to church that you want to.
Right.
You know, so in that sense, it, from the ground roots up, it is a Christian country, because the polls still say that many people do believe in God, but from the top down, it isn't.
Okay.
You know, you can't pray at schools anymore. You can't. Of course, in Texas, we still pray at football games and city council meetings. I live in a small Texas town and commute, but this whole thing of you can't pray in schools, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay.
That kind of thing.
Hey, Leslie, this is Abe here. The title of your book,
Abe.
Hi, it's When Anything Goes, Being Christian in a Post-Christian World. So how would you recommend a Christian to navigate that, as you've just described America as being in a post-Christian type state? How would you suggest for a Christian to navigate that, especially as it concerns being proponents and participants in fulfilling the Great Commission?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
I said especially at considering the Christian's desire and instructions, really, to be proponents and participants in fulfilling the Great Commission.
Oh, I see. Yes, that's a good question. First of all, for Christians to navigate this world, it's important, number one, to pray, because God will lead us. Two, find a group. Find a church where you fit in, that they share the mission statements, that they share the church goals that you do, because the group is so important. You know, the church is so important because that's where you worship communally. That's where your relationships are. There's power in numbers, and that's where you get fed and feed others, basically. And then together you can stand over and against some of the things that, you know, this country's plagued with, drugs and corruption and, you know, all of the stuff that we run into every day.
Okay, Leslie, how does that factor into the purpose for you writing your book?
Hey, Leslie, can you stay? We're going to take about 30 seconds, we're going to take a short break for about 2 minutes. Can you stay till after the break for about 5?
Sure.
Okay, we got
a 5 o'clock?
Not till 5 o'clock
grief.
For about 5 minutes. We got a late start with you.
I think
we
she's going to get tired of hearing herself. You're going to keep her to 5 o'clock? You mean 5 more minutes.
5 more minutes.
Okay.
Thank you, Leslie, for being so gracious to hang around. We're talking with Leslie Williams. She is a novelist, a prize-winning poet, English professor, visiting scholar from Yale Divinity School. We're talking to her about being a Christian in a post-Christian world. The name of her book, the title of it, is When Anything Goes. And we'll start off with Abe's question when we come back. We're going to take a short break here for just a couple of minutes. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Leslie Williams. You're listening.
She can, if she's here to 5, she can just read the book.
5 minutes, just 5 okay. more minutes.
All right, we'll be back. Stay with us.
Thank you. On the next Today's Issues, we'll continue to inform listeners.
I don't know anybody who's ever been pulled over for driving while gay.
Encourage Christians to make a difference.
Our encouragement to folks is to find some help to, in a Christian way, deal with the temptation. Amen.
And equip you to help restore the moral foundations of our nation.
It's the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekdays at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR or online at AFR.net.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. Some of the nation's most prominent Christian universities have been targeted by LGBTQ activists. Campus Pride posted a national shame list accusing dozens of schools of discriminating against gays. Campus Pride says religious bigotry is careless and life-threatening, shaming schools like Liberty University and Biola University.
We've taken a turn in this conversation that all of a sudden we don't have the right as a private institution, even to accommodate, as the Civil Rights Act would allow us to do, our own beliefs. That is, the LGBTQ community demands that Jesus bow to them.
Dr. Emer Kaner is president of Truett McConnell University in Georgia. He rejected their accusations, said the real bullies are groups like Campus Pride.
They are really the religious bigots of the day. They have become those that discriminate most.
In other words, those who preach tolerance are the least tolerant of all. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Tim Wildman, Ed Vitagliano, Abe Hamilton, we are your tri-hosts today. Our guest has been Leslie Williams, continues to be.
Right.
She's a novelist, prize-winning poet, English professor, visiting scholar from Yale Divinity School. She's author of the book, When Anything Goes, Being a Christian in a Post-Christian World. Leslie has been gracious enough to agree to stay an extra 5 minutes, Tim, to be on the show. Abe, you had a question before the break.
Right up to the break. I'm sorry. I'll get right back to it. You were explaining earlier, basically, your recommendations for Christians to navigate this post-Christian world as you've described it. How does that factor into your purpose for writing this book?
Well, I looked around at a lot of people that I know. You know, I'm centered in a church. My husband's retired now, but we're still centered in church. And saw people who drifted away, who thought that Christianity was no longer applicable to their lives, who thought that, well, who needs God or Jesus when you have science? All sorts of sort of drifters away from the faith. And so I thought, I just felt called to write a book that addresses the issues that so many people face in that, yeah, God is okay, but why is Christianity a choice now with so many options? Why is Jesus still the best choice? Well, and so, you know, I looked at it from that point of view.
Well, Leslie, let me ask you this. Has the church made a mistake somewhere along the line? Because, you know, Christianity, if you look at the New Testament, it's not something that you just tack on to the rest of your life. It is a calling to follow Jesus that really is radical. I mean, it's the kind of life that not only has a radical call, but then is filled with radical blessing, you know? So has Absolutely. The church made a mistake in maybe downsizing that vision? Because if people, even churchgoers, if they can think, well, you know, God, I can take them or leave them. Jesus, take them or leave them. It seems like they just don't really understand what Christianity is.
Right. And Flannery O'Connor wrote wild stories, and she said you have to get the attention because people don't realize that faith is a matter of life and death. And I think that there is a sense that in our country it's a take it or leave it, and it has some benefits and stuff. But the early church was radical. The church is radical still. Faith is radical because it goes right into the heart of every person and changes the heart, which then changes the behavior. And we don't see that so much. We just don't. We see more of a lukewarm faith some places. Now, some places are alive and on fire, and I just am so grateful for those places that are and those people who have understood the call.
Well, in fact, you know, whenever in our nation's history on at least a couple of occasions where we've had great awakenings, if you look at that as historical instances in which God has drawn near to America, you have transformations not only in individuals but families and entire communities as well as entire regions of the country. So you talk about real Christianity, that's what it does.
It does. And it ain't over yet. You know, the story
right.
is still going on. God is alive and well. And faith has always been a one-by-one proposition. Jesus right. calls us one-by-one. And then we get together with other people who've been called to yeah. worship and to effect and change the world around us. And that's how it happens. It's always happened on a one-by-one basis.
Leslie, one more question. Leslie Williams joining us, author of When Anything Goes, subtitled Being Christian in a Post-Christian World. Do you think the hostility towards Christianity and Christians, in particular in the U.S., do you think that will grow and get worse? Or do you think not? What do you think about that? Because once you have...
Well,
go
I don't
ahead.
Have the gift of prophecy
right.
in any sense, but it could. You know, it could, but that's not going to deter God from acting in the world, the Holy Spirit from sweeping across.
It's no, but it's going to make life miserable for a lot of us.
Yes, it has.
It will.
That may be the cross that we have to bear.
Well, you may be right. I hope not. I hope not, too,
and I would love to see this country become more grounded
right.
On Christian moral principles. I would love that. I think the more that Christians pray and just soak this country with prayers,
yeah.
things can happen.
Yeah,
things
amen.
Can happen if
right.
each Christian prays with their whole heart, like for the election, for people that they don't even know
yeah.
who are in power.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, Jesus came to save us from ourselves, really.
Yeah.
And that includes big clumps of us.
Yeah. Leslie, thanks so much for being on with us. Appreciate it very much, and look forward to talking to you again sometime. Wish you the best. What's the name of the book, and where can people get it?
It's on Amazon and in Christian bookstores. It's called When Anything Goes, Being Christian in a Post-Christian Culture.
Leslie, do you have a website? I mentioned a couple times that you're... a novelist and a prize-winning poet. You have a website where people can read some of your other stuff?
It's called LeslieWinfieldWilliams.com. LeslieWinfieldWilliams.com.
Thank you, Leslie. Appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging in
All
with
right.
us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate that, too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, she's optimistic. She it's good to hear someone say, God can and it ain't over yet. The story
right.
is still being written. I like yeah. hearing that. So appreciated that.
You
keep our eyes on Jesus.
Tim,
there's no telling what God can do.
You have a perplexed look on your face, Tim.
Well, No, I appreciate Leslie and everything she talked about. I do think, I don't want to overstate, and I'm not a prophet either, overstate the situation that we face as Christians in America today, but I don't want to understate it either.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think we're on a, I don't know what metaphor I would use, but I mean, the hostility of the secular progressives, the average American out there is not hostile to any religion in particular, I don't think. They're just not. But these secular, liberal, humanist, however you want to describe them, some politically they're called progressives, I guess ideologically they are. These people are in positions of power and influence now,
right,
in America.
That amplifies their voice, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
From Hollywood to many in the news media, they have their people in Washington, D.C. They control academia. So these people, they are hostile to Christianity.
Yes.
Particularly, not they wouldn't be hostile to quote, liberal Christianity.
Right.
Whatever that is.
Because that's not really Christianity.
Because it's not duly noted.
Yeah.
That's my point. But if you are a Christian, if you're a Bible, if you're a person who believes in the Bible.
Yeah. You're unwelcome.
Yes, and the Judeo-Christian moral value system, you believe that comes from Almighty God, then you're a target for these people. And so it's a spiritual war going on.
And I'd even go, Abe, you said you're not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I think that used to be their position.
Yeah.
You're not welcome. Now we're out to get you.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, so
it can get worse.
Yeah.
Now you're on the list.
We hope and pray that it doesn't, but it can get worse, and especially if the secular progressives are able to get 4 more years of Supreme Court justices and federal judges.
Right.
That's terrible news for our country, for Christians in our country. And that remains to be seen whether that will happen or not. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're one of the gentlemen who follows what we've just been talking about on a daily basis.
So he's a liberal member of the media, this guy?
Progressive humanist out to attack Bible-believing Christians.
He's one
everywhere.
Of us. He's a patriotic, God-loving,
God-fearing troublemaker.
Gun-toting, I don't know, barbecue eating. Todd, how are you, Todd Starnes?
You know, gentlemen, I believe the reason God has blessed America is because we know how to smoke a pork butt.
That is, you know, I've often considered that in my top five, Todd. Not number one, but I think top five.
Bacon's right up there.
Right, yeah. Right. Todd, where are you today?
Hey, that's a name of that's a title for a book, Todd, by the way.
What's that?
About neck deep in the compost pile, fellas. What a political season we've had.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, does Donald Trump love you or hate you?
You know, I'm not quite sure. A couple of years ago, I got a telephone call from his assistant, and he had read one of my columns and was really impressed with it. And I said, oh, well, please tell Mr. Trump. I said, thank you. And she goes, well, he'd like to autograph your column and send it back to you so you can have it framed for your office. And I said, wait, what? And sure enough, the next day, a courier arrived, and there was my column. And he autographed my column and gave me a little copy of his gold nameplate. And, of course, you know I had it framed here at my Fox News office. Tim, I think you've seen that.
I saw it when I came up there.
Cracker Barrel rocking chair.
Exactly.
So I got to thinking one day, a couple of weeks later, I was out at the Barnes & Noble, and I noticed his book, The Art of the Deal. So I thought, huh. So I bought a copy of that, and I autographed it.
Are you serious?
Back, so.
And you sent it to him?
Yeah, sent it to him. Could explain why I haven't been able to interview him yet.
Only Todd Starnes, ladies and gentlemen, think of doing that. Oh, my word.
That's brilliant, though. I love it.
But, you know, Tim, you really touched on something that is so important. And, Tim, I think a lot of us are kind of feel like I do. On one side, you have the Never Trump crowd, and then you've got the totally sold-out Donald Trump folks. And the rest of us are kind of in the middle, and we're taking it from both sides.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, these are not perfect candidates. Donald Trump is certainly not a conservative. He's barely a Republican. But at the end of the day, here's a man who says he's going to put conservatives on the Supreme Court. He's going to nominate conservative justices. We know what kind of justices Hillary's going to
put on the bench.
And for me, that's the most important issue of the day, because if Hillary Clinton is elected president, she's going to be appointing maybe upwards of three, possibly four justices. And if that happens, then we've lost the court for generations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, without question. And also, people don't appreciate, I think, Abe, you can comment on this. You've been a lawyer and worked in courts. People don't appreciate that these federal judges, mm-hmm. that we're not talking Supreme Court justices mm-hmm. now. I'm talking about federal judges all across America are appointed by whoever the president is, and then almost rubber stamped by the United States Senate. And these people, these judges are the ones, they're little gods is what they are. They've become that way. These people are the ones that hear 98-99% of all the court cases.
Yeah, people don't realize the overwhelming majority of cases, the final result is concluded at the appellate level. The intermediate appellate level on the federal court side.
Which are these federal judges.
Which is these judges. And, for example, President Obama has stacked the benches with radical, left-wing, progressive ideologues who just happen to have black dresses. And a perfect example is the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which includes, the circuit includes all cases appealed from federal courts in North Carolina. There's nothing big going on there right now, is there?
Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
That court was known for generations as being a staunch conservative court. Well, that has changed now. That court has decided
because of Obama's appointees.
Because of specifically because of President Obama's appointees. So in 8 years under one president, he has literally turned a formerly conservative court to become progressive.
Hmm. We're talking to Todd Starnes. Todd, where can people read your columns?
Folks can check out all my columns at toddstarnes.com.
You believe these polls, Todd? Do you think that Trump's caught her?
I'm not sure what to believe with the polling, to be honest with you, Tim. The polls have been all over the place, so it's really hard to say. You know, the issue for me is not the Never Trump crowd. The issue is they're actively campaigning against him. And that, I think, hurts him, you know, especially when there are a good number of evangelicals and conservatives who still have not decided what they're going to do on election day.
What's their point?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean,
the Never Trump crowd. What is their point? What do they? And I don't mean that disparagingly. I mean, I really want to know what the point is.
I suspect a lot of it is that their guy or gal did not get the nomination.
Yeah.
There's some sour grapes there.
Yeah.
But they have genuine concerns about Donald Trump. Look, I think you and I and the rest of the folks there have similar concerns.
So Hillary Clinton would be better.
and that's, you know, and then they go back to this was it the Spurgeon quote about the lesser of two evils, don't vote for either one, and I'm paraphrasing poorly there. But the fact of the matter is every candidate is sinful, has bad things in their life, and so you're always going to be faced with that decision. Does that mean that Christians should stay home on Election Day? I don't believe that's the case. I think that we have a responsibility as good citizens of America to go out and engage in the political process. And Tim, you know me. I've said this in my commentaries a number of times. I'm not telling people who to vote for. That's between you and the Lord. But I can tell you that having Hillary Clinton as president of the United States is going to be a very, very dangerous thing for religious liberty and the First Amendment.
Yeah, and as you, not telling anybody who to vote for too. And I understand, Todd, you're right, and Ed, we've talked about this. You know, there are a lot of Christians who struggle with whether to vote for Donald Trump or not, or to vote. Write somebody in or don't vote at all.
Mm-hmm.
My view is, and when you get into this subject, if you don't allow for a little grace with your brothers and sisters, then you're going to, you know, it's not healthy.
You're going to be eating Thanksgiving dinner alone.
Mm. Yes, exactly.
You know, you gotta give people some room to think differently.
Exactly. My view is that sometimes you have to ask yourself, who's going to do less harm? Okay? I think that's a legitimate way. When your choices, all right, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump are going to be president. If you can't face that reality, we can't carry this conversation on anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. So, if one, we agree?
Yeah.
Right.
There are some people that are saying, like, the Never Trumpers, they may not say it directly like I'm going to say it, but their actions show that they believe that Hillary Clinton would do less harm. How you come to that conclusion.
All right, this is where I tilt my head
and
look at you like a dog.
And you do that, and I go,
Arr. Does what a dog does his owner when you don't throw him the biscuit and you've got it in your hand. That's just, all right, if you only consider the judges, for example, you know, that we've talked about, this is serious business, folks. This is real. If somebody gets into the presidency, as we've seen with President Obama, and they're willing to use the executive branch of the government to come after conservatives and Christians, and they start shutting down radio stations or padlocking churches or doing things to further make life miserable in this country for Christians, and then the other candidate would not have done that.
Right.
Wouldn't be a saint. I'm not saying that, but would not use his office to come after you. The other candidate will use that office to come after you. Don't tell me, Todd. You're not telling me, Todd. I'm that there's not a big difference between that.
Look, I hear exactly what you're saying, and there are so many other dangers outside of just religious liberty.
Right. Yeah.
You have things like the Fairness Doctrine that could be in play.
Yes.
You have attacks on the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a couple of weeks ago, we did a story about the legislation that nearly passed in California and will be reintroduced next year. And this legislation would have banned Christian colleges and universities from requiring students adhere to a statement of faith. It would have prevented Christian universities from teaching from a Christian worldview. I asked one of the Republican lawmakers who actually voted against it if the colleges were overreacting to the legislation, and he said, to be perfectly honest with you, Todd, he said they underreacted. He said not a single person had called his office to complain about the legislation until after it had already been passed by the Senate and had gone off to the Assembly. So that tells me, like the Houston, Texas situation with the five pastors there, where most Christian voters stayed home on Election Day, if Christians do not engage in the political process, there is a price to pay. You know, the bad person in Houston, Texas, in that case, was not the liberal mayor. It was all the good church-going people who didn't go and vote on Election Day. They're the ones who almost got their preachers thrown in jail.
Well, And the fact of the matter is, a lot of Christians have always assumed that, like the legislation in California, well, that's clearly unconstitutional to try to force Christian colleges in that direction. We'll just take them to court. Well, what happens when the lower courts and then the Supreme Court are all leftist? What are you going to do then? You're going to take them to court, and they're going to cement in legal precedent.
Let me a practical point here, what you're talking about, I'll let Todd answer, and I know Abe wants to jump in here. Okay, what the situation you've just described, okay, if you want a chance to prevent the federal courts from becoming all left-wingers,
right,
and you say, I'm not going to do that because Donald Trump was married three times, and therefore I can't vote for him.
Right.
You see what I'm saying here? I'm not saying that isn't an important consideration. I mean, that somebody's lifestyle and their character and their background isn't considered. I'm just saying we have to look at the real choices here that stand before you, and there are real-life consequences of major importance.
Right.
that will be determined by who's elected president, either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, that will impact us. And if you want to say, well, my hands are going to stay pure, even if it means more attacks on Christians,
right?
I'm just saying you need to think about that and pray about that long and hard before you just take that kind of a attitude, because things can change, and they can change real quick, as we've seen with these the IRS stories about them, right, coming after Christian and conservative groups.
Well, like what Todd has laid out, talking about Second Amendment rights.
Yes.
Yeah. Homeschooling.
Coming, yes, after Christian colleges.
Yes.
I'm just saying that's what I mean by do less harm. If you're going to say, well, I think we as Christians, our responsibility is to do good and fight evil. Am I right?
Right.
Do good and fight evil. You do both at the same time. And I'm just saying that the executive branch of the federal government has enormous power today. And if you get the wrong person in charge of that, as we've seen, they can use that to attack us. And I think that they will if another candidate may not advance our cause.
Right.
He or she is not going to attack us. So to me, it's like... Pardon me. To me, it's like you want somebody that's a bad gardener to come over to your house, or do you want somebody that's going to burn your house down?
Right.
You're standing at a fork in a road. You can go one way or another. The one says potholes ahead. Another one says you're going to go off a cliff.
Right. Bridges out.
I'm not going to take the pothole one. Might tear up my car. I'm just going to sit here. No, you can't sit here. You got to go the pothole road, or you got to go over the cliff. Which one are you gonna take? Anyway, Todd. Hey, Todd, you got this story about the Red Cross and the police officer, and we read that. What was that about?
Yeah, this was when the flooding happened in Louisiana, and many people were going to shelters, and many of those shelters were operated by the Red Cross. Some of those shelters operated in church houses. And as we learned in our story, there were several incidents involving evacuees who were told they could not read their Bible, they could not pray inside the Red Cross shelters, that was against the rules. And several local ministers spoke to me about this and said this is what they were being told by these evacuees. We also spoke to a law enforcement officer who was told that he could not pray with flood victims inside the Red Cross facilities. Now, after our piece came out, the Red Cross issued a statement and said that they don't ban anybody from doing this. But quite frankly, what we have here is the Red Cross saying one thing and a law enforcement officer and ministers saying another. So it's sort of a he said, but people are going to have to figure out which side they want to believe.
So where can folks read this article that you wrote on this?
Yeah, folks can go to toddstarns.com, and that's where all of our columns are, and we also have information about our free newsletter more than 125,000 people now subscribe to, and we provide them with culture war news and information that they're not going to get from the mainstream media.
Oh, listen, Todd, thanks for... Where are you off to next? Where's your next...
Tim, excited. I'm heading down to the Values Voter Summit, and can you believe they're going to let me say something from the podium?
I saw that you were on the speakers list.
Let me tell you something, fellas. I'm going to shuck it to the cob, as they say in Arkansas.
That sounds like it hurts.
That's a good thing, actually.
Yeah. Well, Abe here, he's going to be one of the speakers, too.
Abe, we're going to have to get together and maybe have some sweet tea or something.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, fellas.
Todd Starnes, the one and only.
I love that guy.
He's
a great guy.
Hey, absolutely. Todd breaks a lot of stories that would otherwise be swept under the rug.
And yeah,
because of his platform with Fox News, he's able to get a lot of these stories into the mainstream.
Right.
Press. I think that's a good point. I mean, we have to have Christians in every,
yes,
sector of society. He's right. I was in Houston when Mayor Parker got elected. It was one of the lowest voter turnouts ever. City with that large amount of people, less than maybe 15 to 20% of the electorate participated.
We'll be back after this short time out for news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.